This is Talking Business.
Joining me now is Tim Harcourt, who is the J.W. Neville Fellow in Economics at the UNSW Business School. He's a professor there teaching international business strategy. And, of course, he is the airport economist. G'day, Tim.
G'day, Alan. Good to be with you.
Now, since we last spoke, you've become a TV star.
I think you've... a very niche TV star, yes. Yes.
Oh, well, you're doing TV shows, apparently on Qantas as well.
Exactly, yes. The Airport Economist, which, as you remember, was a book about my travels around the world. Yeah, well, I think you very nicely mentioned it a few times on Talking Business. And it's now been made into a TV show that we actually show on Qantas. And I basically go to different countries in Asia first up and have a look at what drives the economy, what drives the population, history, culture, and how you do business in each country. So we've got a series of 12 all across Asia, and then we'll go off to Latin America, Middle East, the emerging markets, and I'll see the whole world all over again, Alan, just like I did with my book.
Now, according to my briefing notes here, your show hook says, is Japan running out of husbands and is China running out of wives? Now, what's that got to do with doing business?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Japan's got this ageing population, and you might remember tourism to Australia was very much Japanese-centric once upon a time, and it was all salary men going to Australia for 3 days and playing golf and doing karaoke and then getting back on the bus to Uluru. Now Japanese tourism is dominated by women because they're running out of husbands. There's a high proportion of women running Japan, running household decisions.
Is this just because women live longer?
They live longer and they're outnumbering men. And basically... Mrs. Hashimoto and Mrs. Suzuki are taking control of the household budget. So it's not so much golf and karaoke and drinking holidays now. It's culture, recreation, health, a lot of interest in leisure tourism. And Japanese are taking longer holidays. It's not the three-day workaholic type Japanese holidays. So that's
tourism to Australia is being dominated by China now anyway.
China's amazing. I think the Amway effect was bigger than the Oprah effect. You remember they bought
out
Oprah?
What's the Amway effect?
Well, the Amway effect is all the Chinese who work for Amway, if they got a bonus for being a good salesperson, usually mainly women, they got a trip to Australia. And so I remember when Oprah was out here with Hugh Jackman doing her show in Circular Quay, everyone thought there was going to be an Oprah effect with Australian tourism. But the Amway effect was bigger because there were so many Chinese coming out for their bonus holiday to Sydney.
I didn't know lots of Chinese people work for Amway.
They do. China's one of Amway's biggest markets. They've sort of done Europe and they've done the US, but now it's China. And that's a bit of a bonus for Australia because they get their bonus holiday here.
So as you travel around investigating how to do business in these countries, do you get surprised?
I do, actually. I find it interesting how the world's so connected now. I think it must be partly technology. It must be partly the rise of the internet, the fact that more people can fly now. I find it quite interesting to what extent people are quite familiar with different parts of the world. And I've got to say, I mean, there's 10,000 Australian small businesses now doing business in China, you know, more than in Europe. So to some extent, I'm amazed that you go to a city like Qingdao, you know, which people say is just a country town and there's, you know, 10 million people there, and you meet a winemaker from, you know, South Australia that just sells wine to Shandong, to Qingdao, to Shandong province, because they know the French and they know the Chileans and the South Africans are in Shanghai. So they've just concentrated right on the market of Qingdao.
Well, it's as big as a country.
Well, it is. I mean, I'm amazed. All my Chinese friends say, oh, that's just a nice little country town. I get there, it's 33 million people or 15 million people, and all the architects from Australia are building, you know, the new airport and the new railway station and the new shopping centre, you know, and if some cities like Chengdu decide they want to have another CBD, so you can do the buildings all over again. So it's interesting to what extent that we're building the Great Mall of China.
Your gag when you wrote The Airport Economist was that you went to all these countries, but you just stayed in the airport for 3 days.
Oh, in the hotel.
In the hotel, that's right. And you got to know the country from the airport and the hotel, and that was enough. But I presume for the TV show you have to go a bit deeper than that.
I know, we do. We do. We try and mix it up. So we'll talk to Australian businesses that are doing business in Japan or India. We'll talk to the local economists, you know, the Alan Kohler of India or Thailand and so on. And then we'll also talk to people who can help you, you know, whether it be the Grand Hyatt that does your accommodation, whether it be Blackmores to see how they're going with healthcare, whether it be Telstra to talk to them about telecommunications and IT in different countries. So it's really partly trying to be interesting and entertaining, but also giving you a few tips on what you can use to get around a country and what customs you need to know and what you've got to be wary of as a foreigner, as well as, you know, the opportunities, because I think some people get a bit worried about going offshore and they're surprised, perhaps pleasantly surprised, how many people have done it before.
Now, obviously, your career has been focused around trade economics, which is why you've travelled so much. Talk to us about what Donald Trump is doing to trade and how things are changing. Are they changing? And also then move on to our relationship with China in the light of Trump's America.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the anti-trade campaign that Trump picked up on against the Trans-Pacific Partnership and NAFTA and so on, I mean, Bernie Sanders had done the same thing, I think, and Jeremy Corbyn and other people on the both left and right. And I think Sanders ran pretty hard on it, pushed Hillary Clinton to the left on the TPP, and at the same time Trump was doing it as well. And I think it's partly because the decline in the American labour market with depressed real wages for so long made people question, what's all this openness and all this trade doing for us? And Trump has, you know, easily been able to say to them, well, obviously you're getting a bad deal from China, from Japan, from Mexico. And I just think we've got to pull back and put America's interests first. And I think that resonated very well, particularly in the manufacturing states like Michigan and Wisconsin and Ohio that had found life pretty tough.
Now, but where do you think this is heading?
Well, one thing about America is that the president doesn't decide all trade policy. It's decided by the Congress. So I think to some extent, I think Trump's rhetoric can be softened. The other thing too is I think Trump wants to do everything by Twitter. And I think if he can get, you know, a couple of large American companies to stay in Michigan, he can declare victory. And provided the labor market keeps improving under Janet Yellen and the Fed and her successors, then he can pretty much claim victory without having to mess up the world trading system too much. And I think for Australia, a country that's done very well out of trade, 26 years of continuous economic growth, exporters pay better wages, better health and safety, I think Australia can actually make a good case that we've actually benefited from trading, particularly with Asia, as Asia's got richer.
But it has become a bit difficult to figure out whether being anti-free trade is left-wing or right-wing. I just wonder whether it's actually still really mostly left-wing and that Trump's right-wing approach at it will go away.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I mean, I worked at the ACTU and then Austrade, and one piece of work I did when I joined Austrade was I showed that as Australia opened up its economy, exporters were the ones paying the better wages, the better health and safety, the better employment opportunity for women, and they're more likely to be unionised and use enterprise bargaining. So I think it's important that trade economists actually show the labour market benefits of trade rather than keeping them as very separate agendas, because you could make the case that Australia had opened up its economy, but it had very good social institutions to make sure that happened, while in America, you know, the minimum wage was frozen and they didn't have very good labour market protection when they've done all these trade deals with Asia and elsewhere.
And what about our relationship with China?
Well, I think it's interesting. It's obviously a very strong trading relationship with the mining boom and the dining boom and in terms of goods. The big change will be with services and investment. I think China's learning that as you undertake outward investment around the world, it's not as easy as you think. And although we're a very open economy in Australia, there have been some investment takeovers that haven't gone through, much to the Chinese government's surprise. And also, I think there is a tension between the United States because, China wants to set up its own Alibaba as alternatives to Apple and some of these big IT firms. So I think there's some competition going on in the technology and innovation space, a lot more than in the South China Sea in terms of geopolitics.
We're just about out of time, but I wanted to get on to Daigous. I mean, the thing about, I reckon the most interesting thing about trade with China is the emergence of Daigous and the fact that it's kind of, in a sense, trade has been sort of decentralised. People are doing it themselves.
That's made a big difference, hasn't it? In the show, The Airport Economist in Shanghai, I've actually got Alibaba and Blackmores together, because the Blackmores business has been totally driven by a lot of consumer behaviour, as you say, people trading themselves, whether it be pharmaceuticals or baby powder for milk and so on. And, you know, you've got really a nation that have always been natural traders, whatever the political regime's in place. So I'd imagine that could play an incredible role, particularly as you see more Chinese brought into the urban middle class with the rise of these second and third tier cities. So that's quite a phenomenon that perhaps we didn't predict when we were selling rocks and crops over to China for so many years.
No, indeed, we did not predict it, and that's most interesting. But we're out of time, Tim. Great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thanks for having me back on, Alan.
I've been talking to Tim Harcourt, who is the Airport Economist.